The Fan on Demand. He digs deeper for the story, and he never shovels you BS. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
We're done with Farwell, hey? The microphone keeps going on and off. Anyhow, we're done with him.
Lance is rubbing his chin. What did Blair screw up now? Which button did he push that he shouldn't have pushed?
Glenn Healy, our intrepid NHL analyst, NHL insider from Hockey Night in Canada joins us. Glenn, tell me something good.
Well, let me see. TikTok, there goes the clock. It's costing the players over $9 million a day each day that there's no deal. $12,500 a player per day. How's that for a nasty number if you're a player?
That is a nasty number. Yeah. I guess with players overseas, I mean, the one thing, we'll get to the CBA in a minute, but I mean, the one thing that you worry about are injuries, and Jakub Voracek of the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, the Flyers, or I should say his agent, Peter Svoboda, saying it's a slight sprain, and he's only a knee sprain. He's going to be out for a week. His KHL team is under the impression it's something a hell of a lot more serious, because they're saying a month. This is, I guess, Glenn, sort of the thing that it's the unspoken, unsaid thing out there when you're talking about what might put pressure on one side or the other. If guys start getting hurt, does that start putting pressure on the players or the owners?
Well, I can see, you know, when you go over to Europe and you play, it's not the same as playing in the NHL. First off, the level of play is significantly less than the push of pace that you have at the NHL. So you don't have that kind of level of intensity that you would have if you were playing an NHL game on a Saturday night when it's coast to coast. It's okay, we're playing Bern, Switzerland, and I can't name three guys on the team, and I'm better than all of them, so I'm just going to go out and play like a game of shinny. And that's when you get hurt, when you're not at your 100% playing full to the go, foot on the pedal, that becomes an issue. Hey, I just spent a couple days down in Bahamas, and I, you know, booked the trip well in advance of absolutely knowing there'd be no hockey, so that shows the faith I had. But there are a number of players down there vacationing as well, and I talked with all of them, and I'm not going to say who they are because, you know, rat them out. They're supposed to be working out. But I saw the same thing in the fitness facility down there where, you watched a couple of guys come in, you know, 15 minutes on the Stairmaster, a couple more minutes on the treadmill. It's like, all right, where's the pool? Screw this. You know, and that's the hard part because you're in that waiting period. Do you work out till December? Do you work out till November? Is this thing going to go an entire year? I can tell you that there is concern in all of them that unless both sides start waking up a little bit, they're on the cusp of this thing just totally imploding and there not being a season. The next to go is going to be more games. The following that's going to be the outdoor game, which is a lot of preparation. And then after that, who knows? It's all bets are off.
With Glenn Healy on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, I had a chance to sit down with Gary Bettman last week. And I'm sorry, Donald Fehr. Boy, is that not a Freudian slip. Donald Fehr last week.
You don't want to get those two mixed up.
No. And you know what? I came away with a couple of things, Glenn. But one of the things I came away with is there's a real sense of lack of movement. You know, which is no surprise because there isn't any movement. But I'm saying when people like that are kind of, you know, resigned to there not being any movement, you really got to worry.
Both are 11th hour negotiators. That's Don's history in baseball, and that is Gary's history in hockey.
What determines the 11th hour then, Glenn?
Well, that's the paramount question I don't have an answer to, nor do you. But I can tell you this. If the players think that 22 teams are going to come screaming through the door in the middle of November and say, please, let's play, that is a strategic flaw. That ain't happening. Not from the owners that I've talked to or the people in management. That's not happening. And if the players think that there's going to be a much better deal come beginning of December or end of November, that's wrong too. The best time, I think, to cut a deal is now or in the next couple of weeks, because if you start looking at a 42-game season or you start looking at the Winter Classic getting canned, the deal's not getting sweeter. And likewise, from Gary's standpoint, I mean, if he wants to continue the momentum of this great game, and, you know, John Collins just met with some of the big sponsors, and they're ready to dump a ton of money in our sport. There's no question this is a penny stock. Then now's the time to make your best offer, because certainly the offer you've made isn't your best. We know it can get sweeter, and we know the players can back off their offer, because when you look at the way it sits now with teams in the NHL, 15 teams are over $60 million. You know, that's 28 of them are over 50. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a correction here, then you best get at it pretty quick.
With Glenn Healy on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. One of the things I took away when I talked to Don, it's the first time I've had a chance to actually ask him about his initial offer. And I said, I think a lot of us were surprised that you didn't include in your initial offer the doing away of the salary cap, because we know that Don comes from, you know, having negotiated contracts in baseball where there is no salary contract. And his response was, well, we haven't done that yet. And, you know, essentially saying, you know, look, it's entirely possible that, the next time we talk to the players or when we get prepared to do something, they may say, you know what, as part of this next proposal, take the salary cap off the table, make it part of our next proposal. I took that to be almost an implied threat in some ways to the owners. Like, we didn't give you our nuclear option, I guess, and I hate using borrowing warfare phrases, but Donald Fear is essentially saying, hey, you know, we didn't give you the nuclear option of, okay, we'll do this, this, and this, but you got to do away with the salary cap. We didn't do it yet, but we're holding it here. And, you know, if you're the owners and you get a proposal from the NHL Players Association that includes doing away with the salary cap, I mean, you're way back. That's like nine steps back. And then that creates a sense of a greater distance to go. I mean, that's the only thing I could take away from that.
Really, Jeff?
Yeah.
Next trick. You actually think that if he makes the threat of taking away the salary cap, that he's going to have 750 strong behind him to miss two full years of hockey to get a no cap put on?
Well, no,
the table?
I mean, it would be, but what I'm saying is that the threat that he has there
it's
is that.
It's a veil threat. It's a veil threat, because you got to have your constituents back you to say, yes, we will go through the wall for you to enact that. And the constituents in 2004 that were prepared for 5 years, I was still playing.
Right.
We were putting money away for a lockout. I mean, that's a way back. Bob Goodnow had that no cap speech. It was ingrained in our heads. As a broadcaster, I was going down the road of no cap, drinking the Kool-Aid. Now, okay, that's as strong a group as you could have possibly had, and as battle ready as you could have had, and they cracked at the seams, but they lasted longer than any other professional sporting group. They stuck it out for a year, then they took what they had to take, because the owners were going to get it from hell or high water. They were getting it. They missed a year. They missed all that salary. They got a deal that seems to be working pretty good for them. Cap or no cap, it doesn't matter. They're making the dough. And the owners have a deal that works for some of the teams, not all of them. So to go down that road, you are asking for a nuclear war that you are not going to win, because players have a shelf life of a certain amount of time to play, and owners are going to have these teams 20 years from now. So if they have to wait it out, they wait it out. And the big thing here too, Jeff, look at the owners and look at what the teams mean to their overall holdings. And if you're telling me that the Toronto Maple Leafs have to play for Larry Tannenbaum to make a profit and put food on his table, you're wrong.
Mm.
And that's the most profitable, richest franchise in the National Hockey League. So I'd say it's a veiled threat, and I would tell Don to his face, it's a veiled threat.
When you were in the stoppage as a player in that season you were talking about, Glenn, when did you know it was done? When did you know that, okay, this thing shut down?
It was hard, Jeff, because, you know, this is back in the day when I was given a calling card.
Sure.
I was a player rep, and I had to call Russia with a calling card to try to get a hold of, you know, players that didn't speak English, and I'm trying to speak to them and talk about numbers that make no sense to me as a college graduate. How's it going to make sense to them? So communication wasn't great. But, I mean, there was a time it was Chris Draper, Glenn Healy, Nick Kyprios, and Dave Reed working out in my basement, because I happen to have a couple Stairmasters and bikes, you know, we'd get on the bike, go for a little bit, and then look at each other and say, let's go get a case of beer. We just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if you look back to 94 and the history that it teaches us, you know, Bob was given a mandate when he went to New York, you get a deal. Gary was given the same mandate, you get a deal. Gary blinked first. And I think we're at the same point here now with both these guys. They're talking about ancillary issues because they both know that something's got to give. They both know that. They're not dumb enough to think that one side's going to take the other side's offer. But who's going to blink first? And that's the stalemate we're at now. But as we're waiting for a side to blink, time is ticking away. And at some point, it's going to tick too far away.
Glenn, I appreciate you doing this. How was the Bahamas, by the way?
Bahamas was fantastic, yeah. Not bad. That's the faith I had in the start of the season. I booked at the beginning of July.
That's very smart.
Yeah, you got a good deal that way. It was great. But no, there's a, you know, that's the thing. I mean, life goes on. I was down there. I got the USA Today each day, and there isn't a hint of lockout news anywhere down there. There's not a hint in the USA Today. So it's passionate here, but around the rest of the world, it's crickets.
Yes, it is. I appreciate your time as always, Glenn.
Good stuff, Jeff.
Be well. That is Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada, our NHL insider on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The thing I like about Glenn is he's not just a yes guy, you know. You say something, if he doesn't agree with it, he tells he doesn't agree with it. I saw, and maybe I was reading too much into Donald Fear's statement. Maybe it really wasn't that much of a threat as much as just a reminder that, you know, when we made our initial proposal to you, and I can tell you, I mean, you think the conversations we had with John Shannon in this show and other people, and John Shannon is really wired in with the upper echelons of the NHL. And they were expecting, because Donald Fear came from a league with no salary cap, because Donald Fear had said publicly, you know, on several occasions leading up to the negotiations, hey, there's a reason that the only league that hasn't had a labor issue in the past 10 years is baseball, the only league without a salary cap. Well, there's an issue, or there's a reason that hasn't arisen as an issue. There's a reason that the NBA, the NFL, and the NHL, all salary cap leagues, have been leagues that have had labor stoppages. So that message was out there, and a lot of people in ownership thought that Donald Fear's first move, or that his first offer would be, you know, a bunch of stuff, but with the main focus being the removal of the salary cap and replacing with a luxury tax or a soft cap, however you want to describe it. And Donald Fear and the NHL Players Association caught the owners off guard with their first proposal because it didn't include that. And maybe what Donald Fear was doing is just kind of very subtly reminding Gary Bettman and the owners that, hey, you know, we didn't play our card. I mean, we didn't play the quote-unquote nuclear option. So maybe that was something to serve as a reminder to the owners. One thing that does not people, one group of people that do not need reminding of anything are Buffalo Bills fans. Your team stinks. The Bills got crushed again by the San Francisco 49ers. And boy, all that money spent in that defensive line, you know, it appears to be about as well spent as all the money that was spent on Ryan Fitzpatrick. Kerry J. Byrne, the national football writer with SI.com and Cold Hard Football Facts, he will join us. We're going to talk about the Bills. What the hell is going on here? We're going to take your calls. Is it time for another regime change in Buffalo? Let's kind of spin that a couple of ways. Who do you blame for what's going on in Buffalo? Management, coaches, or players? And when you call up, give me a one-word description of the Bills' year so far. And keep it clean. So you got two things to think of. Call up 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, 590 by text. Give me a one-word description of the Bills' year so far. And while you're at it, who do you blame for it? The players? The head coach? Defensive coordinator Dave Wannstedt? Or management? Kerry J. Byrne and your thoughts on the Buffalo Bills. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Not every caller gets a surly response. Just the stupid ones. So don't say anything stupid and we should all get along just fine. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like, so I'm just watching this replay of Mexican soccer highlights. Not really. Well, actually, yeah, kind of. It's on the soccer channel while we were off. And apparently there's a red card given out in the Mexican League this weekend because one teammate pretended to shoot the other as part of the goal celebration. And whoop, out comes a red card. The stuff you get, the stuff you can see when you got like 750,000 channels in front of you. Kerry J. Barron is the national football writer for Cold Hard Football Facts and SI.com, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Kerry, thanks so much for doing this.
Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You couldn't avoid writing about the Buffalo Bills, could you? You just couldn't. They stink, well, Kerry. They're awful.
They're not a good team. I mean, some of the numbers are ugly. We chronicled them this week in Cold Hard Football Facts and also on Yahoo Sports. I mean, let's run through some of them, Jeff. 90 points given up in the last six quarters of football. That's 60 points per game, the equivalent of 60 points per game. The first team in history to surrender more than 300 yards rushing and passing in the same game against San Francisco. The most yards allowed in Bills history, the most yards gained in 49ers history. And, you know, the 49ers, Jeff, have a pretty long and distinguished history of great offensive teams. And this was their greatest offensive output in history Sunday against Buffalo. And then the other team is the other thing, Jeff, is that Buffalo does not play. Not only do they not play well on the road, they are historically inept, giving up 300 points on the road in their last eight games. That's 37.5 points per game, Jeff, for your listeners keeping score at home. That is awful, awful defensive football, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. I mean, how do you sugarcoat numbers like that?
What do you do if you're the Bills, Kerry? Because they've invested money in Mario Williams, and at the time, it was a huge contract. But at the time, a lot of people seemed to think the deal made sense. I think we're seeing now why the Texans probably just rubbed their hands with glee when that happened. But what's going on here? Because
you know it's poor management, Jeff, and that's what happens in the NFL. The NFL, there's so many moving parts, so many players, so many coaches. So many, you know, aspects to the game. It's such a complex sport. It's well-managed teams win games, and poorly managed teams lose games. Look at the consistently great organizations, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the New England Patriots. You know, teams like that have great consistent ownership and consistent coaching and management, and that's what wins games in the NFL. And by the way, the Buffalo Bills should be reading their Cold Hard Football Facts. That Mario Williams deal was a disaster from day one, and we laid out in all the statistically gory details, why that was a bad deal. Not only giving him the biggest contract for a defensive player in history, which on its face, you know, you better be getting the greatest defensive player of all time if you're going to pay the most money of all time. I mean, that's kind of the cold reality of the NFL, and that's what, again, teams like the Patriots and Steelers, they manage the cap well. They don't overpay. They know if you pay twice as much for a player, you better get twice as much production, or else it's a bad deal. That's, you know, it's a salary cap environment. You only have so much money to spend. You have to ensure that all aspects of your team can perform at a high level given the financial constraints. And the Bills hurt themselves, one, overpaying for a player. But not only that, the Texans last year, Jeff, were a better defense without Mario Williams than they were with him on the field. They were a better defense without Mario Williams. He's underachieved. I don't know what they were looking at. I don't know what tape they were looking at. I don't know who they thought they were getting. Maybe they thought they were getting the number one pick in the 2006 draft, but they weren't getting an elite defensive player, and they dished out elite dollars. Again, it comes down to poor management, and I know it's going to be frustrating for Bills fans to go through this Groundhog Day year after year after year.
Well, Kerry, it seems to me the part of the issue here is – and maybe because we kind of watch the Bills a little more closely than some teams, maybe we just notice it, but it seems to me the Bills are forever, I don't know if it's a fundamental issue with how they draft defensive players. I don't know what it is, but it seems like they're always using some aspect of free agency to try to address egregious draft decisions. And maybe that's what is the sign ultimately of a poorly managed team.
Well, I can tell you, and not to, you know, I can't rattle off their free agent decisions in recent history off the top of my head. Though, you know, the Williams deal obviously was big news around the league. But I can tell you this, you know, throughout history, teams are built in the draft. That's how they are built. You can go through any great team that had a great period of success, and what they did is have a couple, two or three great drafts in a row. Let's look at recent history. The Patriots, who have, you know, won the AFC East title every year since 2001, a record streak of the best record in the division, 11 seasons in a row? Mm-hmm. You know, right now they're in first place again. In 2000, they drafted guys like Matt Light, who recently retired, who was an anchor at left tackle. Tom Brady, they drafted. In 2001, they drafted Richard Seymour, who became a great defensive player for their championship teams. Go back to, you know, the 1970s. The Steelers dominated the 70s because from 1969 to 1974, they nailed one draft after another. I'm sure the Buffalo Bills in the 1980s, they hit on some really great drafts. Guys like Cornelius Bennett, you know, who was a high draft pick. And a lot of these great defense, not just one guy. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of these guys were great draft picks, and they just nailed those drafts. You can't build a team through free agency. What you do with free agency is you fill some statistical weaknesses, you fill some gaps, but in reality, you have to harvest your own talent. The Pittsburgh Steelers, year after year, have always drafted fairly solidly, and look what happened for 40-something years now. They've been a consistent Super Bowl contender because they find the right players, and the Bills just, it comes down to a lot of little things that they're doing wrong, and at the end of the day, it manifests itself in their statistical performances on the field, which is how we ultimately judge teams.
With Kerry J. Byrne of Cold Hard Football Facts, when I was talking about the Bills free agents, I mean, I know the Bills haven't been, you know, they haven't gone out and blown the doors off the free agent market a lot of times, but it does seem to me that, and maybe that gets to the point as well, it seems to me that they quite often trumpet even a second tier free agent signing is, well, this guy will help us out in this area. And I guess to get to your point, Kerry, the good teams use free agency, and I think it's like this in every sport, to be honest. The good teams use free agency to address shortcomings that result from injury or just the fact that you're not going to hit in every draft pick. Sometimes the guy that you think is going to turn out well doesn't turn out that good. Well, but to build your team around a core of free agents, I just don't think that works in almost any sport.
I don't think I've seen it at any point in football, a team built through free agency. There is always the foundation of great draft picks. Always, oh, you know, let's look at the 49ers, a great, you know, the team that the Bills lost to in historic fashion. But, you know, in the 1980s and 90s, they were the dominant team in football. Well, in 1979, they drafted Joe Montana, and they drafted some other good players along the way. And then in 1981, really, the draft that made the 49ers the 49ers was the 1981 draft. They drafted Roddy Watt, number one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of turned out to be one of the great defensive backs of all time. Three of their top four picks in 1981 were defensive backs. Those three guys, Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson, and Roddy Watt, all started as rookies in 1981. San Francisco's defensive pass rating, a key measure of defensive success and team success, dropped 35 points from 1980 to 1981. For all of a sudden, they had a great defense. They went on to win the Super Bowl that year. And for the next 17 years, those 49ers never gave up 300 points in a single season. Everyone talks about the Bill Walsh offense, the West Coast offense, and this was an offensive team. No, the secret to the 49ers was that they fielded the longest defensive dynasty in NFL history. Like I said, 17 years, never gave up 300 points in a season. It's remarkable that they did that and consistently won and consistently had great young defensive players, all starting with that 1981 draft. You go to any team, any dynasty, you find those foundation picks, and, you know, I just haven't seen those from Buffalo in recent years. And, you know, again, it manifests itself in the performances on the field. And I picked them to be the second best team in the AFC East this year. And I thought, you know, they're up 21-7 in the third quarter on the Patriots. I'm saying, hey, this is a turnaround game for the Buffalo Bills. This is a game where, wow, they're going to be in first place in the division. And then over the last six quarters, they've just completely disintegrated before our very eyes.
What do you think the issue is with Ryan Fitzpatrick? Is he just simply not that good? Is that another bad contract?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a regular quarterback. He's a pretty good quarterback, but he's not a, you know, championship caliber quarterback. There are certain things great teams do consistently well. One, they get the ball down the field, and they have a high passer rating, and they have a high defensive, you know, a very stingy defensive passer rating. Those are kind of the numbers we look at. And I'm looking at right now in our game chart, Bills versus Cardinals coming up, and the Bills are an average passing team. And, you know, they run the ball very well, by the way. I mean, they're averaging over 5 yards per attempt, but he's a mediocre quarterback. That's what the numbers tell us. He doesn't get the ball downfield particularly effectively. He has moments of near great, I don't want to say greatness, but, you know, moments of great productivity where he looks like a legit quarterback. But the legit quarterbacks, the Tom Brady's, Peyton Manning's, on and on, they do that week after week, quarter after quarter. You know, there may be some meltdowns here. Peyton Manning, 3 interceptions in the first quarter against the Falcons a couple weeks ago. But consistently, they're among the league leaders in efficiency. We want to look always at the efficiency numbers, average per attempt, passer rating. That's what great quarterbacks are always good at. That's what great teams are always good at. And the Bills are immediate right now, number 12th in, you know, yards per pass attempt. Not bad, but it's not Super Bowl caliber. 17th in offensive passer rating, you know, bottom half of the league. Average, you know, not great. And, you know, then we, you know, look at what we call real quarterback rating, measures all aspects of quarterback play. They're 16th. They're an average offense paired with a pathetic defense, and that's the formula for what we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
Kerry, is there, when you look at a team like the Vikings, or, I mean, even San Francisco, and I know quarterbacks, I mean, a lot depends on the talent they have around them, obviously, but when I see a guy like Alex Smith, even a guy like Christian Ponder, is there statistical evidence that having what I'm going to call a risk minimizing quarterback is a shortcut to success for teams?
Hey, absolutely. You know, we joke about this. People make fun of game managers.
Mm-hmm.
They use it almost as a pejorative, right? Oh, he's just a game manager. The cold hard football facts love game managers. Game managers win championships, Jeff. Bart Starr was a game manager. He rode that to 5 championships. Joe Montana was a game manager. You know, that's what people, you know, ridiculed him. Not ridiculed him, but people said was a flaw in his game. He was a dink and dunk, high percentage passer. He won 4 championships. Tom Brady, especially early in his career, was a game manager. He won 3 championships. Since he's become a prolific passer, he hasn't won anything. It's those game managers, those high efficiency guys, are what you want. And I don't understand why football people make fun of it. It's not something to make fun of. That you want those high efficiency guys. And anytime you look at a team, if they improve dramatically in the space of 1 year, go instantly. It works like clockwork. It is the closest thing to clockwork in sports. Go to their passing efficiency numbers on offense and their passing efficiency numbers on defense. And there you will find the reason for the turnaround. Jim Harbaugh comes in and takes Alex Smith last year and turns him into an efficient game manager who threw 3 interceptions last year, something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the 49ers, number one in offensive passer rating, number one in real quarterback rating. They are the most efficient passing team in football. Combine that with a great defense, so that makes opposing quarterbacks very inefficient. Boom, there's your secret to success. And you can look at, you know, Christian Ponder this year. He's improved dramatically, and that improvement in the passing game is a big reason why the 49ers have improved so dramatically. You know, by the way, the other thing, we talk about defensive efficiency, making opposing quarterbacks inefficient. The 49ers last year had the second worst defensive passer rating in the history of football. The only team worse were the 2008 Lions, who went 0-16. The Vikings were terrible on pass defense last year. Couldn't stop anybody. I think it was 106 defensive passer rating, which means opposing quarterbacks week after week put up 106 passer rating against them. This year it's down to 85. They're 12th in the NFL in defensive passer rating. So there on both sides of the ball, they've improved dramatically. They've gone from 3-13 in 2011 to 4-1 in 2012. Those passing efficiency numbers always show you the key to improvements or declines on a given team.
Kerry, before we let you go, I did want to ask you to give us the cold hard football facts insider information for our listeners.
Yeah, we got a cool our premium product is called Cold Hard Football Facts Insider, and what it is, it's what we call a real and spectacular picks, Jeff. It's every team sized up and 20 different quality stats. You heard me spitting out all these numbers. We size up every opponent in every game and 20 different quality stats that have a direct correlation to winning football games. We tell you who we think is going to win based on those numbers with a great track record of success. We also have a really cool feature at Cold Hard Football Facts Insider called Spreadopedia. It's pretty neat. It's a database of every score, point spread, over-under line since 1978. Easy to search database. And your listeners, Jeff, by the way, if they go to Cold Hard Football Facts, click Insider and enter coupon code Toronto. A coupon code just for your listeners. They'll get $20 off a season pass to Cold Hard Football Facts Insider. Will we provide what we say, Jeff, the statistical secrets to winning NFL games, all those numbers I just talked about.
Kerry, I appreciate you doing this, as always.
All right, Jeff, thanks for your time.
You be well. That is Kerry J. Barron. He is a national football writer for Cold Hard Football Facts and SI.com. You can also read his stuff on Yahoo Sports. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-660-590. Who do you blame for the Bills' woes? That ahead on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Offering up a stiff serving of truth on the house. Come and get it. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
21-yard line. Three receivers right, two to the left. The snap. Niners rush four. Fitz over the middle. Caught by Chandler. Has the first. Now the ball comes out. And it's a loose ball at the 33. The Niners recover. They'll get it back at the 27-yard line. Goldson came up with it. Scott Chandler had it in his hands. He had the first down. And the ball came out. Goldson recovered.
Yeah, the good thing is that folks in Buffalo aren't getting really worked up about their Bills. 45-3 losers on Sunday. Some ugly numbers, as you heard from Kerry J. Byrne of Cold Hard Football Facts. 621 yards total offense, the most ever by a 49ers team. And the previous record was 598 yards, and that was set against the 1992 Buffalo Bills. I mean, when you but the point that the thing that really interests me about beyond that, the raw numbers that are testament to the Bills' inadequacies. If you take a look at their last eight road games, only one team has scored less than 28 points, and that was the Cleveland Browns. The Bills beat them 24-14. Week three. But listen to some of the yards allowed in these games. In a 44-7 loss at Dallas, the Bills gave up 433 yards, 366 yards in a 37-10 loss at San Diego, 480 yards in a 49-21 loss to New England, 384 yards in a 48-28 loss to the Jets, and of course, 621 yards in their 45-3 loss to San Francisco. In those eight games offensively, Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Bills have scored 115 points, 14.4 points per game. So in their last eight road games, they are being outscored 37.5 to 14.4. 37-14 they're being outscored in their last eight road games, during or over the course of which they are 1-7. That they stink. And that's a topic of discussion here. At 416-870-0590, *590, 888-666-0590. For whatever reason, I think Chan Gailey and Buddy Nix have been given I wouldn't say they've been given a lot of rope, but they certainly, people certainly seem reluctant to jump on the dump Chan or dump Buddy bandwagon. And I want to get your sense. Who do you blame for what's going on in Buffalo right now? Do you blame the coaches? Do you blame management? Do you blame the players? I mean, you'll hear things. I mean, Chan Gailey's already said, you know, well, blame me for that last game. And, you know, Mario Williams says, well, blame the players. It's the players, not the coach. That's all bull. I mean, of course, guys are going to sit there and say, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault. But, I mean, when you've been outscored 97-31 your last two games, 97-31 in your last two games, and you've got a head coach who, I mean, just all he's saying is we've got to go fix something. He's not going to change his quarterback, but he's got to go fix something. I mean, where do you put the blame here? Dave Wannstedt is supposed to be a defensive genius. But if you watch their games, there's lousy tackling. I mean, I don't know, and frankly, neither do you. None of us know enough about game planning to sit there and say, well, you know, it was a great game plan or it was a poor game plan. I mean, the numbers would seem to indicate it wasn't very good. But, I mean, one thing you do know when you watch the Bills play, there's a hell of a lot of missed tackles. You know, you watch their highlights, or you watch their games, and the number of plays where you can tell something has been blown is remarkable. And it, as per our discussion with Kerry Byrne about offense, I want, if I'm the Bills, I want a risk minimization offense. I don't have enough pure offensive talent, I don't think, to try to run with the big boys offensively. I mean, the running game is fine, but I'm talking about to try to get involved in the shootout. I want a risk. I want the risks minimized. That's what I want with my offense. I want a Christian Ponder type of offense. I want an Alex Smith type of offense. I actually want my quarterback's first priority to be, I want my quarterback to be a little conservative. This team really is a mess. And, well, we got it. Who do you blame? The players, the coach, or management? Sammy in Streetsville, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning. Number one, the management is brain dead. They haven't been able to identify a quarterback since Kent. Remember Lossman? Lossman not look like he... Talk about a deer in the headlights. This guy reached his peak in high school football. This guy is not a professional quarterback. Look at this. My main beef is the fiasco with Flutie. Flutie busted his chops, bringing this team to the playoffs, and then what does the brain-dead management do? They start Rob Johnson. That's all you got to say. They start Rob Johnson.
It's gone back. It goes back all that way, doesn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the issue of or the series of lousy decisions goes back all the way to Flutie and Johnson. It really does. Let me ask you this, Sammy. We'll have it in the line. I mean, what the hell? At this point, do you give Tarvaris Jackson the shot at quarterback?
Listen, I don't understand why they signed the current guy, Fitzpatrick, for all that dough, because he had one big game. He had one big game against an inferior opponent last year, and they signed him as if he was the Messiah. This guy can't throw a ball 30 yards. Look at him. He cannot throw a ball 30 yards in the air. This is an NFL quarterback? It's unbelievable.
So, Sammy, you lay the blame on management going all the way back to Flutie.
They just don't seem to know how to pick players, whether it's in the drafts or even free agency. They pick lame ducks. They pick people that are being discarded. Look at the Mario Williams fiasco. This club is definitely, it's got to be the worst club in the league. Because every year, the expectations are that they're a playoff club, and they're just a disaster show.
Sammy, I appreciate the call. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Who do you blame for the Bills' malaise? Players, management, or coaches? And when you're giving up that many points, when you are playing that badly and giving up that many yards, that to me, it can't just be one area that's at fault. But you know what? I'll tell you what. If it isn't just the coaches at fault, or if it isn't just the players at fault, you know what that means? That means it's management at fault, because management's responsible for bringing in the players and the coach. So if you can't nail it in one or the other, it's got to be management. Mike in Thornhill, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff, one thing I do is I blame anybody who thought that a solution to the problem was to make them free agent signing and that it's going to plug and play and improve the team this year. Nobody improves right away with free agent signing. Look at Philadelphia last year. They brought in Asamoah. Everyone thought they'd be the best team in the league. They went nowhere. It's not, you can't plug and play in football.
Well, I think when a lot of us looked at the Bills' free agent decisions, and, you know, initially, and I admit, I mean, I don't follow the league as close as some people do, but initially I thought, all right, well, they're spending money to address, you know, they need some playmakers in defense. I mean, offensively, they had a nice little team You know, I like some of their parts offensively. Not sold on the quarterback, but I was sitting there looking at it and saying, okay, that could work, but they need some playmakers in defense. So I've got no problem spending money on playmakers in defense. But I think what we've seen, to your point, is that you really, I mean, it just reinforces that you can't paper over lousy drafts and poor decision-making by simply going out and writing a check and getting the biggest name on the free agent market. It doesn't always work, and we should have known that. But, you know, I think a lot of people, it was something positive for the Bills, right? Finally, the narrative had been changed. It wasn't a woe-is-us situation. Suddenly, the Bills were spending money. They looked like they were going to try to be players. And Mike, you're right. I mean, it's like a slap in the face. It just reinforces, you know, your opinion on free agents. Don't get carried away with it. Every now and then you need that to happen. But honestly, at this point, I don't think this is correctable. I don't think the Bills are correctable. I really don't. I think this is a team that is going to suck perpetually. I really do. I don't know what you do to change it. But there seems to be some sort of institutionalization of lousy decision-making in this team. Nothing goes right for the Bills. Nothing. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, the numbers to call. Sean, you're on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Very quickly, please.
I would go right to the defensive coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Tim and Sid had a defensive lineman for Buffalo on their station before the season started, and they asked him just straight up, what do you think, you know, the vaunted defense, what you thought, how you guys are going to fare, and he just kind of had like a silly little chuckle. He didn't even really respond with anything. He just kind of chuckled like they were the big thing, and that seems to be a mindset that's been put into the players, and the only one to blame on that would have to be the defense coordinators.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I actually remember that interview. I appreciate the call, and that, yeah, I mean, look, if all you have to do is go and read some of the comments from Bills players in the past 2 weeks. Go and read some of the comments. This is a team that really, is just lost. And I mean, honest to God, I think we're about a couple of weeks away from seeing a coaching change there. And I don't know why they can't make Dave Wannstedt the head coach based on what we've seen with this defense. But I think we're a couple of weeks away at most from seeing a coaching change there because they spent a lot of money. They ain't winning. And more to the point, they're getting worse. And yeah, that San Francisco is a good team. I realize that. But I don't know if they're 621 yards good. You know what I mean? Matt Devlin is the Raptors TV play-by-play voice. The Raptors beat Real Madrid. No surprise, Real Madrid did not dress Cristiano Ronaldo. Nonetheless, the Raptors beat them. We'll talk to Matt Devlin. Kyle Lowry's hurt. We'll take your Raptors calls. And Donovan Bailey, former 100-meter world record holder, will join us. Usain Bolt told everybody this weekend he's going to run in Rio in 2016. He's going to run the 100 and 200 meters. A lot of people a little surprised. They thought he may go 400 to try to just keep the competitive juices flowing. But Usain Bolt says he's going to be back. Donovan Bailey will join us. We'll have a lot of hoops, a little track and field as well. All that ahead. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.